Yeah. Yeah. I want to take a second to talk about cricoid pressure, and we're going to talk about it on a couple of different levels, both on the BLS level and the ALS level. And there are a couple of misconceptions that I think are floating around out there. And I hear it from educators, from lab instructors, from EMTs, from paramedics, from new EMTs to old paramedics. And so I sort of want to set the record straight a little bit as far as what does it do, why do we do it, when do we do it, and you know, are there other things that we can do besides cricoid pressure to help achieve certain goals. So cricoid pressure, why do we do it? We provide cricoid pressure, which is the posterior displacement of the cricoid ring. We provide cricoid pressure to pinch off the esophagus during BVM ventilation. And we especially want to do this during BVM ventilation of the unconscious patient, because an unconscious patient that has poor muscle tone and their sphincter above their stomach is probably relaxed, and anything that's in their stomach is going to work its way through gravity down the esophagus and eventually end up in their airway, especially when you're providing BVM ventilations. Because if you are providing positive pressure ventilation, not all that air is going to make its way into the lungs. You can be providing perfect BVM ventilations. Air is still going to go into the stomach. Gastric insufflation is going to occur. And I like to say it's not a matter of if, it's when vomit leaves the stomach because of gastric insufflation and comes up the esophagus, it's going to end up in your airway and it's going to cause a problem, possible aspiration. We want to avoid that. So we perform cricoid pressure. Cricoid pressure will not stop gastric insufflation, but it'll put off the time till regurgitation, and that's valuable. It might buy you that couple of extra minutes you need to perform endotracheal intubation and get a better airway in before regurgitation and possible aspiration occur. Contrary to popular belief, cricoid pressure will not prevent someone from vomiting. If they're actively vomiting and you're performing cricoid pressure, it's probably the same as kinking a hose. You're just going to cause more of a spray. You're not going to stop vomiting. There's another misconception that's popular amongst paramedics that cricoid pressure should be utilized to increase, to better your view of the glottic opening during direct laryngoscopy. So in other words, you're performing intubation, you stick the laryngoscope in someone's mouth, you sweep to the left, you pick up the jaw, you have an okay view of the glottic opening, and you would like a better one. So what do people normally ask for? Give me some cricoid pressure. And I have two things to say about that. One, you should probably have been performing cricoid pressure anyway, because prior to your intubation attempt, you should have been performing BVM ventilation. And cricoid pressure should continue throughout your intubation attempt, because if you're stopping regurgitation with the cricoid pressure and you release it, potential for regurgitation is there and aspiration. Second, if your goal is to get a better look of the glottic opening during direct laryngoscopy, yes, cricoid pressure does result in some posterior displacement of the glottis, simply because the cartilaginous structures around the glottis are attached to the cricoid membrane, the cricoid ring. You push it posteriorly, you do drag some of those structures backwards. Yes, it may give you a better view, but if your goal is to get a better view, perform direct laryngeal manipulation, not cricoid pressure. Take your hand, your right hand, reach around while you're performing direct laryngoscopy, grab the patient's larynx, and move it around until you get a better view. A lot of people may be familiar with the burp maneuver, which is backwards, upwards, rightwards pressure. And that just reminds you to go in a specific direction. Again, backwards, upwards, and rightwards, and to the right. And if you think about it, going backwards relative to the patient's anatomy, if you go backwards, upwards, and rightwards, you're going in the exact opposite direction that you displaced all the anatomy during direct laryngoscopy. Because we stick the laryngoscope in, we sweep to the left, and then we pick up and out with the laryngoscope. When we go backwards, upwards, and rightwards, we're just going backwards, putting the glottic opening back into the original position before we drag it away, increasing our view and giving us a greater likelihood of success during our intubation attempt.
How difficult should, you know, what sort of like force are we talking about here, moving the
larynx around? Actually, remarkably very little. And you can do it on yourself right now. Reach around, grab your larynx, and move it back and forth. And I'm actually doing it right now as I'm talking. And it's not so traumatic that it prevents me from talking, although my voice may waver a little bit, but it's easy to actually move it. It's an easy procedure to do, yet all too often people don't perform it when they're having trouble visualizing the glottis. And I think that's a problem, and I'll take some responsibility for that as an EMS educator, because we don't teach, for the most part, EMS educators don't teach paramedics to do this. Go home, open up a paramedic textbook and see if laryngeal manipulation is mentioned. It's probably not. This is not new. This is not rocket science. Emergency room physicians have been doing this in workshops for years. It's not a secret. It's something that's employed everywhere in medicine except in pre-hospital. It's simply, like all too many things, hasn't filtered down to our to our education yet. And as a textbook author, that's something that I'm changing within my own textbooks. I talk about direct laryngeal manipulation any chance I can now, both when I'm speaking, whether it be to a classroom or at a conference, or writing about airway control for a textbook.
Any idea why it hasn't? Is it just one of those things that just hasn't filtered down yet? Or
I struggle with this. I ask myself all the time, why does it take so long for things to filter down from everywhere else in medicine to the to EMS level? And I don't know why. I don't. I think part of the reason may be just because in EMS we tend to rely on dogma and what we've done in the past. People are afraid to make changes to some degree, I think. And when it comes down to it, I don't think that people who design courses or curriculum or write textbooks have made it a priority to go out and look for things like direct laryngeal manipulation as one example, unless it would end up in there. There is no reason why it shouldn't be there. Right. It doesn't require any tools. There's no added expense, which a lot of people will say is a good reason for why equipment doesn't filter down to us, but it doesn't require special tools. There's no added expense. There's not too much of a thought process behind it. You just have to put it in the material, learn it in class, make it part of what you do every day, every time you're taking care of an airway. Make it automatic. And it'll get done. And the great thing about it, it's simple, and it will increase the likelihood of a successful intubation.
So walk us through the sort of the steps of it again. Just kind of lay it out there for us.
Very simple. You position yourself as you normally would for any attempt at direct laryngoscopy. And often in the emergency medical environment, that means laying on the floor behind the patient. Hold the laryngoscope in your left hand like you normally would. Insert the laryngoscope as you would for any other attempt at direct laryngoscopy. Leg gets inserted. Slide the tongue over to the left. Lift the jaw up and out without rotating your wrist, keeping your wrist straight. You don't want to use the teeth as a fulcrum. At that point, take your right hand, which should be empty, reach around, and grab the larynx with your thumb and your pointer and your middle finger of your right hand. And just grab a hold of the larynx and move it around from right to left and up and down. Don't be shy. You're not going to hurt the patient. You're not going to break the larynx. Move it around until you get a better view. You'll be surprised at how mobile the larynx really is. In my experience, anywhere from 1 to 2 centimeters is not uncommon to actually be able to move it around. And just take a second and think about the last time you had a hard time visualizing the glottic opening. Maybe the patient was had a very anterior and superior glottic opening, and it's a kind of laryngoscopy attempt where you get in there and you're looking, you can just barely see the bottom cartilages, but you can't see the opening. Next time you're in that position, take your hand, grab the larynx, and move it around. You'll be surprised at how better a view you will get.
So then once you have it in place, once you let go, isn't it just going to bounce
it is. Back to where it is? And the problem at that point, of course, is you have the laryngoscope in your left hand, you have the patient's larynx in a perfect position so you can see it in your right hand. Well, now you got to insert the tube. At this point, you have someone who's nearby actually reach over with their hand, grab the larynx, and you can let go and have them hold it in place. And typically, there'll be a little bit of movement, and it may actually move out of view. And what I'll do is, have them hold the larynx, I'll move my hand, there'll be a little bit of movement, I'll reach over, grab their hand, put it back exactly into place, and say, hold it right here. Let go, and then get my tube and the tracheal tube that's been prepared, and insert it into the trachea.
All right.
Don't pick it up with your teeth.
All right.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from emsresponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.